We'll get to that in a little bit, but we're changing gears here, and obviously the biggest legal story of the week has to have been the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict after, a long time of deliberating. Well, a long time in my interpretation, but maybe not so. 3 or 4 days, they came up with the not guilty verdict on all counts. We got attorney Audrey Anderson joining us right now from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. Audrey, thanks for hopping on with us for a second straight week to talk about this case.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm very excited to talk about this.
Yeah, and before we dive into it, I kind of mentioned how long the jury deliberated for. Did it surprise you? Did it not surprise you in terms of the length? I mean, there was a lot of things they had to kind of dive into that were really technical and difficult.
That's a good point. There were a lot of things for them to listen to. And don't forget, this is all brand new for the jurors. They're not any individuals with legal background. So for them, all these concepts of self-defense, aggressor, provoking violence, that's all new. And there was a lot of evidence and videos for them to consider and deliberate on. So 4 days does seem long, but for the charges and the things that they had to review, it seemed an appropriate amount of time.
Not guilty or guilty, I do always appreciate a jury that does its due diligence and really dives deep into it. I know it's hard to sit and wait, and even harder for the defendants and, of course, the families of those who died, but an important thing to do. A lot of hay was made about the jury instructions, right? About even a juror asking to bring it home and the confusing aspect of jury instructions. Jury instructions are given in every jury trial, I imagine, right? And they're not easy to understand. Even someone with a legal mind sometimes has to break those things down. That's hard.
Right. They can get very, very complicated, especially with self-defense. There's a lot of additional instructions. But it was somewhat unusual that the judge allowed the jurors to actually take them home with them to review. I've never encountered that before, but perhaps that's something that this specific judge has done before, but that's definitely unique and unusual.
What would be the worry of a juror bringing it home? Is the idea not necessarily that they bring it home, but what they're doing when they get there? Are they calling and reading the instructions to someone else for an opinion? Like, is that the concern about, you know, kind of bringing them out of the courtroom area?
I think that's always a concern, even though that they're instructed to not discuss their testimony that they've heard, any of the evidence. But yes, that they go home, that they look things up themselves, even though they're not supposed to, because they're really supposed to deliberate, all 12 of them together, deciding together what they think everything means and how the evidence fits within those rules and the instructions.
That's interesting. So they're really not even supposed to go home and analyze too deeply about things because it's supposed to be a discussion together.
Right, exactly.
I know that there was jurors overheard when they came back into the room, I think on the day the verdict was read in the morning, talking about how stressful it was. One juror, a reporter, overheard a juror say something like, I couldn't sleep last night, or I slept a lot less. This is a lot that we are asking a jury of our peers to go through. And I imagine, you know, a case like this with a high profile, that's stressful on these folks.
It's very stressful. I don't know how many jurors I have spoken to over the years, these past 20 years afterwards, and they all say the exact same thing, that it is very stressful. It's overall been a very positive experience for them, but it is. It puts a lot of pressure on them as regular people to decide a person's guilt or innocence. And that's why it's very important during the initial questioning by the judge and the attorneys to make sure that jurors really do take it serious and that they can understand and appreciate the seriousness of it and that they're able to handle that.
I was listening afterwards about polling of the jurors done by attorneys. Is that an official thing that happens as part of courtroom procedure, like there's a room where the attorneys can go talk to the jurors, or is it an informal thing? They find out who the juror was, they literally walk up and talk to them and find out what made them tick or not tick.
Right, so polling the jury, what the judge does is the clerk typically, or sometimes the judge, in the open courtroom will ask each juror to stand and ask them if this now and has been their verdict,
okay.
And they say yes. And then after that, the jurors go back to their room to gather their belongings. And usually attorneys can wait where the jurors come out to speak with them. And if the jurors want to stop and talk, that they can. And sometimes, depending on the judge, they'll let the attorneys go back to the juror room, and the judge will ask the jurors first if they want to speak with the attorneys, just to answer general questions, or just so the attorneys can get feedback about what they thought were critical arguments that were made, or what they thought of certain witnesses.
In your experiences, do most jurors want to talk, or are they just ready to go home?
Actually, most jurors do want to talk because they have so many questions about the process, and they like us knowing what they're thinking because it shows value to them and their process and the time. that they spent listening to the trial.
Do you learn critical information in that discussion, not only about retrospectively about what happened, but does it inform and help you do things differently in future trials?
Yes, it definitely does. It's very, very beneficial, I think. Although each jury is so different, the makeup of the jurors themselves, but it is important to see what regular people who sit on the jury, what they think of the process.
We're talking with Audrey Anderson from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors, who's a criminal defense attorney now, but worked in the state's attorney's office in DuPage County. If you didn't hear our conversation last week, on the other side of it, on the prosecution side, which one is, I don't want to say which one's harder, Audrey, because that's a weird question. They're both difficult in their own ways. Waiting for a jury to come back, is that harder as a defense attorney or is that harder as a prosecutor or is it different feelings and it's hard to compare?
Right. It's different feelings. It's hard to compare. It's difficult on both sides. As a prosecutor, it's difficult because you're waiting and you're consoling the families who have lost a loved one or who have gone through a trauma. But then on the flip side, as a defense attorney, you're representing an individual whose life really hangs in the balance depending on the outcome of this trial.
Yeah.
So it's difficult for them and their family as well.
Let's talk about the defense in this case, putting on a mock trial, which I imagine is pretty common for, you know, big profile cases or defense attorneys. But they kind of did two different scenarios, and it may have led to the decision to whether Kyle Rittenhouse took the stand or not, right?
Correct. Definitely. That was very smart, especially in these very big, high profile cases. That's something that defense attorneys do a lot, do mock trials, just to see what witnesses, how they come off, how regular people view their witnesses and certain arguments that are made.
So they did a mock trial with Kyle testifying and one without, and apparently they were swayed enough by his testimony to bring him to the courtroom and actually do it in the live thing. But I imagine that mock trial is what ultimately decided for them to do it, correct?
Definitely, absolutely, because it not only gives the defense attorneys the knowledge to see what a juror thinks of their client, but it also gives them and their client the confidence to go up there on the stand and testify. So it makes your client more comfortable because he's already run through it one time with you asking questions and one of your partners pretending to be the prosecutor during cross-examination.
Still a risk, though, even if you feel good about how the mock trial went.
That's very true. It's always a risk because your client and you know it's just pretend to practice. But when it's the real thing, there is a lot of pressure.
I know a lot of people are upset about how the verdict went down. I'm not going to ask you specifically about that. I know that we had protests here in downtown Chicago about that. This is really hard because there's a lot to tackle with a verdict like this. There's a lot of extraneous circumstances going in specifically to this trial. But the prosecution really had a steep hill to climb here, didn't they?
They absolutely did. Overcoming self-defense, especially when you have other evidence, not just the defendant testifying, such as video evidence. I mean, technology is out there all the time. There's media coverage, surveillance footage, cell phone camera footage. It's all out there, and you never know with your prosecution witnesses what they're going to say, and it's very difficult to overcome self-defense in a situation like this.
I heard some people say that this was the most surprising not guilty verdict, complete exoneration since O.J. Simpson. But that self-defense is a lot more difficult in those sorts of things than just a simple guilt or innocent, or I should say they've proven beyond reasonable doubt, right?
That's true, because really, if you think about it, the prosecutor has to prove two things. First, they have to show that he committed these murders. And then they have another hurdle. They have to have witnesses to defeat the defense of self-defense. They have to show that the defendant truly was the aggressor to begin with. So they're really tackling two huge burdens and hills to overcome.
All right. Audrey, you don't mind sticking around a little bit, right? That's okay with you?
That sounds great.
All right, great. I'm going to put Audrey on hold. Of course, Audrey Anderson from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. We'll have more information about them and what they're doing, a little bit more about Rittenhouse, and a very rare clemency determined by an Oklahoma governor, a very high-profile case. Kind of surprised me that clemency was granted. We'll talk with Audrey Anderson about that after the news here on WGN. It's Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. People still trying to guess at our question of the day. Don't worry, we will have some time for you to answer it a little bit later this hour and the next one, too. What 89 words changed U.S. history? We'll get to that a little bit later on, but we're continuing our conversation with Audrey Anderson, who's a defense attorney. Audrey, thanks for continuing this conversation here after the news. A little bit more about the Kyle Rittenhouse case before I switch gears. You know, a lot of people, you know, kind of upset with the result, as I mentioned. A lot of people happy about it, too. But, you know, there is something about the jury verdict, and Joe Biden said this, other people have said this, even ones that are disappointed, is that there is something, I don't know. I mean, there's something very American about a jury trial, and that there's a certain respect that needs to be given to a jury verdict, correct? I mean, you must feel that too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Jury trial is essential for our system of justice. And those 12 jurors, those men and women that sat there, they gave everything that they had. They had immense pressure. They took a significant amount of time to reach their decision. So calling into question their time and decision is could be detrimental for our judicial system.
Right, right. I almost feel like it's like elections, right? Like, it's one of those things. Win or lose, goes your way, doesn't go your way. The system is important, and there's an honor to that. In certain moments of the trial, the judge really hammered at prosecutors, and a lot of people were wondering and worried of a mistrial with prejudice. Can you first explain what that is?
Absolutely. A mistrial with prejudice means that the prosecutors would not be permitted to try Rittenhouse over again if the mistrial was granted, meaning it would just be a mistrial forever and no one would ever determine truly his guilt or innocence.
And I think that would probably be the worst scenario for people, right? Because that's one person making a really important decision.
Absolutely. So it's definitely, even though attorneys and other individuals were questioning what the judge would do, that would definitely have been detrimental. And poor Mr. Rittenhouse, it would have been hanging over his head for the rest of his life, and he's only 18 years old.
Right. Does that often happen? Does that happen very often? That's probably got to be an extraordinary thing.
It's very rare to grant a mistrial with prejudice. If it was a mistrial without prejudice, that means that the prosecutor can go back and start over and pick a new jury and try that individual again with the exact same charges.
As we waited for 4 days, a lot of prognosticators, including myself, people who don't know a lot about law and the legal system, wondered, as it goes longer and longer, is that better for prosecution? Is that better for defense? What do you think normally? Is it really impossible? Does it matter case by case?
It's really impossible. It's definitely case by case, but I think a lot of people think the longer the jury's out, the better it is for the defense. Because if it was such a slam dunk for the prosecutors, the jurors would have come back sooner.
Yeah. I think that people who, if you think it's a slam dunk either way, people start to get worried when it goes a little bit longer. Like, if you think it's a slam dunk not guilty, which a lot of people did, a lot of people were saying, this is a no-brainer, not guilty based on everything I saw. Not everyone said that, but a lot of people said that. And then as it went on, I was talking on the Mincing Rascals, a show, a podcast we do here on WGN. Folks that I was chatting with there, because I'm the co-host, felt that actually it went longer. It was better for the prosecution. I guess it's best not to read the tea leaves too much and just wait to see what the jury says.
That's very true. It could go either way each time.
Yeah. Oklahoma's governor spared the life of Julius Jones on Thursday, just hours before his scheduled execution. It had drawn widespread outcry. I mean, people were protesting in the Capitol in Oklahoma City. There was lots of protests about doubts about guilt and the slaying of a businessman more than 20 years ago. Governor Kevin Stitt commuted the 41-year-old sentence to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. That was the recommendation, I believe, of the parole board. He had been scheduled for execution just hours later. An insanely tense situation. Audrey, do you know much about how often is it? I mean, that's pretty rare for clemency to be granted that late in these circumstances.
It does seem as if it was fairly late for the governor to grant that, but it does happen. And I think it just shows the struggle that governors have with one person interpreting the decision from the judicial system and overturning it.
Do you think, but I guess that there has to be one person at the end of that line, right? Or do you feel like it should be like state Supreme Courts? I guess I shouldn't ask you your opinion too deeply on this because you're part of the system, but it is a lot for one person to have to handle.
It is a lot for one person to handle. And he had a lot of evidence to look at. Like you mentioned, the parole board earlier the month had voted to commute the sentence to life in prison without the possibility of parole. and others had supported it as well. But then, you know, the judicial system, the judge, the jury found him guilty and sentenced him to death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really intense case. A lot of people on both sides of it. Speaking of both sides, we're talking with Audrey Anderson, of course, was a prosecutor working in the state's attorney's office in DuPage County, now a defense attorney. And Audrey, how can people reach out to you? What's the best way?
They can contact us through our website or give us a call on our phone. We're happy to answer any questions that they have or help them with any cases that they have in the surrounding counties.
Yeah, for sure. It's AndersonAA.com. The phone number is 630-877-5800. That's 630-877-5800. And the website, again, AndersonAA.com. Audrey, thanks for giving us a little extra time today. We appreciate it, and have a great rest of your weekend, okay?
Thank you so much for inviting me. Have a great night as well.
Yeah, we really appreciate her expertise on the matter.